Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Vijendra's Prayers of Surrender, Text Number 1. Sri Bhadaranayar Uvacha Evam Yavyasthito Budhya Samadaya Manoridhi Jajapa Paramam Japyam Prak Janman Yanushik Shitam. Shri Bhadaranai Uvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, thus, Yavyasthitaha, fixed, Budhya, by intelligence, Samadaya, for concentration, Manaha, the mind, Ridhi, in consciousness or in the heart, Jajapa, he chanted, Paramam, a supreme, Japyam, mantra he had learned from the great devotees, Prakjanmani, in his previous birth, Anushikshitam, practiced. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, therefore the king of the elephants, Gajendra, fixed his mind in his heart with perfect intelligence and chanted a mantra, which he had learned in his previous birth as Indradumya, and which he remembered by the grace of Krishna. Purport. Such remembrance is described in the Bhagavad Gita 6:43-44. Tatra tamburi samyogam lavate purva dehi na kam dehi kam yatata chautito buya samsido pukurunandana purvabhya senatenaiva purvabhya senatenaiva riete yoshi sopi saha Ignasyapi Yogasya Yoga Prapyanivartate. In these verses, it is assured that even if a person engaged in devotional service falls down, he is not degraded, but is placed in a position which he will do in due course of time, remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained later, Gajendra was formerly King Indradumya, and somehow or another in his next life, he became the king of the elephants. Now Gajendra was in danger, and although he was in a body other than that of a human being, he remembered the stotra he had chanted in his previous life. Yatate chatato buya samsido kurunandana. To enable one to achieve perfection, Krishna gives one the chance to remember him again. This is proven here. For although the king of the elephants, Gajendra, was put in danger, this was a chance for him to remember his previous devotional activities so that he could immediately be rescued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is imperative, therefore, that all devotees in Krishna consciousness practice chanting some mantra. Certainly one should chant the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the Maha mantra, or great mantra. And also one should practice chanting Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu, or the Nishingha mantra, Strotra. Ito Nishingha Parato Nishingo, Yato Yato Yami Tato Nishingha. Every devotee should practice in order to chant some mantra perfectly, so that even though he may be imperfect in spiritual consciousness in this life, in his next life he will not forget Krishna consciousness, even if he becomes an animal. cause. A devotee should try to perfect his Krishna consciousness in this life, for simply by understanding Krishna and his instructions, after giving up this body, one could return home back to Godhead. Even if there is some fall down, practice of Krishna consciousness never goes in vain. For example, Ajamil, in his boyhood, practiced chanting the name of Narayan under the direction of his father, but later on in his youth, he fell down and became a drunkard, woman hunter, rogue, and thief. Nonetheless, because of chanting the name of Narayan for the purpose of calling his son, whom he had named Narayan, he became advanced. Even though he's involved in sinful activities, therefore we should not forget the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra under any circumstances. It will help us in the greatest danger, so we, as we find in the life of Gajendra. Shri Padarani Uvacha Evam Vyavyasito Budhya Samadaya Manoridi Jajapa Paramam Japyam Prajanman Yanu Shikshiktam. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter the king of the elephants, Gajendra, fixed his mind in his heart with perfect intelligence and chanted a mantra which he had learned in his previous birth as Indradumya, and which he remembered by the grace of Krishna. The word mantra comes from the Sanskrit man means mind, and tra means to deliver. So it's a sound vibration which will deliver our minds from illusion, principally. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that we work not with our body, actually, we work with our mind and intelligence. And the center of yoga practice is the mind. The intelligence is supposed to help the mind fix itself in Krishna consciousness. So the mind is like the intelligence is like the steering wheel. Actually, the intelligence is like the driver and the steering wheel. The intelligence is like the steering wheel, and I guess you could say the mind is the driver, although the intelligence is actually the driver. The senses, the horses, and the reins, I guess, would be the mind then. In any case, the aim is to fix our mind in Krishna consciousness. And the easiest, and for that reason, we try to develop our buddhi, our intelligence, so we can see how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, sarabhutastam atmanam sarabhutani chatmani iksite yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha, that the true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamayi pashyati, that for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamayi pashyati tasyaham na pranashyami na chamena pranashyati. The perfection of our life is to be always in Krishna consciousness. In other words, whatever we look at, whatever we smell, whatever we taste, whatever we hear about, whatever we smell, should remind us of Krishna. That's the perfection of Krishna consciousness. If our mind is remembering Krishna, then our life is always remembering Krishna, then that's the perfection of our life. People may not know that, Tevidu Swartikatim Hi Vishnu Darashaya Ye Bahya Artamanya. They may not know that. As a matter of fact, people are fixing their minds on different material objects. thinking that these objects will gratify my senses, my material senses, and if my material senses are satisfied, then I'll be happy. But the soul also has spiritual senses, and when the spiritual senses of the soul are conscious of Krishna by taste, by smell, by hearing, by taste, smell, touch, hearing. Do we say smelling? What's the last one? Anyhow, there's five. What's that? Sight. I left out sight. Okay. Seeing, smelling, tasting, hearing, and touching. Then one is actually absorbed in spiritual consciousness. Now, a mantra is a sound vibration, but factually speaking, everything that we're motivated by is sound. Everything begins with sound. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Indriyani mano buddhir asyadishtanam uchate aitera vimahodyatyesha jnanam avrityadehinam, that the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders it. And as Prabhupada writes in the purport, that everything begins with hearing the glories of something. Modern society is simply based upon glorifying someone or something, whether it has any significance or not. Just like nowadays, people's minds are absorbed in this coronavirus. Whether it exists or not is not important. The people, that's all they're thinking about. So if there were no coronaviruses, certainly at the end of people's lives, they're going to become a coronavirus. If that's what they think about. Or they'll become something similar, like a bacteria or something, because that's what their minds are absorbed in. Now, practically speaking, most people's minds are being encouraged, at least previously, to be absorbed in buying something. Buying a car. The glories of this car, how fast it runs, how little gasoline it requires, how it has all these features. When people hear about it, they become lusty. I need that car. I can't live without the car. That is called ahamkar. I am the car. So, after hearing the glories and the mind's absorbed, then one will use the senses somehow or another to acquire that car. One will work to get the money, or maybe steal the car. Somehow or another, one will get the car, if one is deeply absorbed in thinking about the car. After hearing all the wonderful things about the car, then one becomes deeply absorbed in the car, thinking about the car day and night. I can't live without the car. And then somehow or another, one will try to get the car, either honestly or dishonestly. And it'll all be based upon, if I get the car, then somehow or another, my ego will be satisfied. My senses will be satisfied, my mind will be satisfied, and my false ego will be satisfied. So lusty intelligence influences the soul to acquire false ego, by which it misidentifies itself with the gross and subtle body for sense gratification. In other words, if we know that we're not the body, we know that we're a spiritual soul, and that we have spiritual senses, and no amount of material opportunities, either here or in the heavenly planets, will actually satisfy the self, then one will not be inclined so much to become fanatic or absorbed in thinking about material things. Because one will realize that even if I get whatever I'm looking for, whatever I'm hankering for that's causing so much suffering because I want it so much, but when I get it, I may be temporarily satisfied that I finally got what I wanted, But after all, eventually I'll lose it, and then I'll lament and suffer even more because I lost what I wanted. If a beggar works very hard, accumulates a vast fortune, and then by providence he loses it, then how much more he laments than if he was just an ordinary beggar. He'd suffer more by getting what he was worked so hard for and then lost than if he never had it. But the whole idea is that we can be happy by some material arrangement, by when the material nature of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego is arranged in a certain way, then we'll become successful. But what is it? It has nothing to do with the self, with the soul. In other words, the soul will become successful when it becomes eternal, when it realizes its eternality. What could be better than if to realize that we're going to live forever? No more anxiety of the future. Because the soul, its future is always, if it's in consciousness of Krishna, then it's very bright. And even if it's not fully conscious of Krishna, even if it's Brahman realized, then there's nothing to worry about. Nisoshiti, Nikangshiti, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. He becomes joyful all the time. No worries. Because whatever happens in the material world has nothing to do with our actual self. Therefore, there's nothing to hanker for and nothing to lament about for one who's Brahman realized. And if one can actually understand Krishna as the super soul in everyone's heart, then Krishna can guide one towards the ultimate perfection of life as the super soul, so that one can come in contact directly with Krishna himself and revive our eternal loving relationship with Krishna, which is the actual goal of life. For one who doesn't understand that, then there's so many different things to hanker for and lament over, and not only in this lifetime, but in all our successive lifetimes, we'll be doing the same thing, hankering for what we don't have and lamenting after losing things. Life after life. But neha bikramana shosti pradyavayo navidite swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. That if one tries at least to become conscious of Krishna, then one gets some permanent benefit. Of course, it is not that Krishna consciousness is going to negate our material activities. It is not that I can do whatever I want to and chant Hare Krishna, and the Hare Krishna mantra is going to counteract the sinful activities I'm doing. The Maha Mantra will work and give us an opportunity to make spiritual advancement, but according to the activities we're doing this lifetime with this body, we'll have to get our next body also. They both are not negating, they don't negate each other. If I chant Hare Krishna, but I act like, as it said, is it here, I act and commit some offense, as Indradumya did, then he became an elephant, although he was nicely chanting his mantra that he was given. But as an elephant, he was able to, at the critical time, chant the mantra, and therefore his life became successful. That the curse wasn't really negative in the sense that because he was cursed as an elephant and he had a crocodile biting his foot, he was much more sincere in his chanting than normally he would be sitting in an isolated place in a mountain chanting the mantra. That the circumstances we're under, if they're conducive to help us concentrate our mind upon Krishna, then that's very good. And if we're in wonderful circumstances and they don't help us concentrate our mind upon Krishna, that's not very good at all. No one is looking for trouble usually, although trouble is usually looking for us. But we don't have to look for trouble in Kali Yuga, because that's all there is trouble. Queen Kunti had to pray for difficulty so she could remember Krishna. But we don't have to pray. We're much more fortunate. Even without a prayer, the difficulties will come one after another. All we do is have to try and take shelter of Krishna while we face these difficulties, and then we'll make great spiritual advancement. And then when there's no difficulty, if we can still maintain our Krishna consciousness, then we become steadily on the platform of spiritual life. Somehow or another, as it says, the greatest problem, the greatest calamity, is if we forget Krishna for 1 second. Not that there's the greatest calamity is not the earthquake, or we get coronavirus. But the greatest calamity is if we forget Krishna for 1 second. The greatest loss, the greatest calamity, is forgetting Krishna. And to remember Krishna, the basic principle is we have to accept, we have to hear constantly that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. We're forgetting Krishna very easily in this world because of our attachment to so many different material objects. We think this is I am the body, this is my body, this is my pen, this is my clothes, this is my mind, and anything that happens to these things disturb our mind. What's happening to my mind? What's happening to my clothes? What's happening to my wealth? What's happening to my family? What's happening to this and that? And our minds are agitated because we think it's ours and we're losing something. Yes, we should try to help others, but we should understand everything belongs to Krishna and that we can't lose anything because we don't own anything. It's not our family. Everything belongs to Krishna. It's not even our body. It actually belongs to Krishna. And therefore, we should try to utilize every opportunity in Krishna's service and not be attached to whether we're so-called successful or unsuccessful. We should be attached to try to do something for Krishna. Just like Jatayu, he fought against Ravana, but he lost. And when Ramachandra came and he saw that his devotee Jatayu was lying on the ground, he appreciated greatly Jatayu's effort to defeat Ravana, although he couldn't do it. Ramachandra didn't say, "You're supposed to be on my team, and my team never loses." I declare in the Bhagavad Gita that wherever there is Krishna, where there is Arjuna, there will certainly be victory. So you must have done something wrong, Jatayu. What's wrong with you? You're a third-class bird. That's all you're good for, is for the birds. No, he appreciated Jatayu's effort as much as he appreciated Hanuman's effort, throwing boulders into the ocean. So Krishna is not so much interested in whether we're so-called successful or unsuccessful. He's interested whether we're doing something to please him, whether we recognize that everything belongs to him, and therefore inquire from Krishna and from his representatives how to utilize our resources in his service. Then if we do that, the first is karma yoga, the second jnana yoga, and the third is bhakti yoga. We're not only accepting everything belongs to Krishna and try to utilize everything with care and attention to please Krishna, or we're not only following Krishna's directions through Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, but we're doing everything with care and attention in order to try to please Krishna. And that the result is, our reward, is that we remember Krishna. Like Gajendra remembered Krishna, and then Krishna came. When we're remembering Krishna with devotion, he's actually there. That is called Krishna consciousness. we may not be so much conscious of Krishna, even when we remember him, but gradually as the mind becomes absorbed in remembering Krishna, then we'll be able to feel his presence and actually understand that Krishna is actually there when we're remembering him. But if we don't recognize everything as belonging to Krishna, then Maya will take our intelligence away. And we won't be able to remember Krishna. We won't be able, if we don't think everything belongs to Krishna, where is there any question of utilizing everything in Krishna's service? And if we accept everything belongs to Krishna and utilize it in his service, but we don't do it to please Krishna, then we won't become Krishna conscious. So all three have to be there. The acceptation that everything belongs to Krishna, the finding out what Krishna wants us to do through his representatives of Guru, Sadhana, Shastra, and then consciously doing things with care and attention in order to please Krishna. Then that is full Krishna consciousness, full Buddha yoga, and in any circumstance, well, whatever we do in that regard, that will be permanent advancement. If we don't come to that platform, we may do things in the consciousness that things belong to Krishna, so that's very good. It means we're remembering Krishna. But if we just don't act dutifully, and we don't do it to please Krishna, we're not conscious of Krishna, then that's not spiritual. And that will not give us permanent advancement. When we remember Krishna, when we do things to please Krishna, when we understand things in relation to Krishna, when we follow Krishna's instructions and do things to please him, then we'll remember him, and that's permanent advancement. Then even as much as we advance that way, even if we're in a lower position, or materially speaking, in our next lifetime, still auspicious Krishna consciousness can continue under any circumstance. Still we can continue to understand how everyone and everything is related to Krishna, become more deeply aware of what Krishna wants us to do, and then become more and more enthusiastic and steady in trying to do everything with care and attention to please him. And then one day, as we're remembering Krishna, then we'll realize that Krishna is actually present there, that there's no difference between Krishna and his name when we chant Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Avadhuta Roy. Yes.
For what reasons other than curse and offenses a devotee might become animal in next life? Some sages due to offenses become monkeys in Vrindavan. Does that mean due to offenses one can become also an animal outside of Vrindavan? Any other country in Western?
Yeah, well, we have the example of Bharat Maharaj falling in love with a deer cub. And because he fell in love with a deer cub and he died inauspiciously looking for the deer cub. Therefore, remembering the deer cub at the time of death, he took the body of a deer cub. So if you have a dog, you fall in love with the dog, you pet the dog all day long, you take the dog for walks, the dog licks you and you lick the dog, then you might become a dog in your next lifetime. Whatever we fall in love with, that's the form we're going to take. Anything else? Yes.
On Ajamil, from a comment, this was also done without any offense to the name, either previously or in next life. So question is, if he chanted the holy name in his previous life, why he had taken rebirth as Ajamil?
What's that?
Should I repeat question?
Well, I don't remember. We're all chanting Hare Krishna now, but we have to become perfectly chanting Hare Krishna. We actually have to be conscious of Krishna. when we chant Hare Krishna. If we're still in the back of our minds, unconsciously, imagining ourselves to some degree or another to be the proprietors of this universe, part of it at least, and we're not really so sure if we want to do everything as a servant of Krishna, we still have our independent desires, and we're not really in the mood of trying to just please Krishna because we're not even so much aware of who Krishna is, then we may go in chanting, and we may make some improvement if we follow the process, but we may not become perfect in one life in the chanting. There's things to work on. And then next lifetime, we get another opportunity to take up where we left off. Okay, one more question.
I wanted to ask about this becoming an animal. What is the point of our imprisonment in animal's body? If it's when it's said that animals don't produce karma, and what can we learn from this? If this is
they don't produce karma, but they live karma out. If one is intolerant, then one becomes become a tree. Then you have to learn tolerance, because wind comes, the rain comes, the snow comes. People carve things on your trunk. You have to learn tolerance. So we don't learn tolerance in the human form of life. We'll learn tolerance as a tree.
So with living out and learning all those things, we, after so many lifetimes, earn a human form of life. So this is somehow accumulated, all those experiences.
Well, there's an opportunity. Yeah. An intelligent person learns by hearing. A less intelligent person learns by experience. And some people don't learn. So we've been here since time immemorial. Obviously, we're slow learners. We're not learning very much, most people. Therefore, in spite of going through 8 million species of life, when they get to the human form of life, they're not really prepared to surrender to Krishna still. So therefore, they're given the opportunity, but if they don't utilize it, then they go back to the other 8 million species of life again. And since we're eternal, eventually people catch on and learn the lesson sometime or another.
I have another question, if I can.
Okay.
This Brahman realization, you were mentioning you are no lamenting, no hankering, but then again it seems quite... how this can be sustained for a longer period, because
you have to come to that platform to realize, compared to where we're at now, it's quite nice. But we don't know what that experience is, so it's inconceivable to us. What to speak of, as Prahlad Maharaj said, if the happiness in Brahman realization were multiplied 100 trillion times, it wouldn't equal to atomic fraction of one drop in the ocean of devotional service. So since we can't even understand Brahman realization, how will we understand the happiness in devotional service? Without practicing devotional service, maybe by Krishna and Srimati Radharani's mercy, then we'll get one little drop and then we get some indication.
But either in material or spiritual condition, we extract some happiness only from some service. So who do we serve in Brahman with no relationship? How can we extract...
You just sit there and think how wonderful you are. All right. Khala Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.